Thank you.
No problem. Hi, I'm Ivy. I'm alcoholic.
Hi.
I have my sobriety date is February 11th, 1995. I have a home group. I sponsor women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have a sponsor who knows she's my sponsor. I talk to her on Fridays. And we used to go to a meeting together on Tuesday, but she moved to like a different state, which isn't that hard to do in my area, to be fair. But she it's hard for her to get to that meeting anymore, so she comes online. But I do talk to her on Fridays, and she knows what's going on with me. And I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much for asking me. It's always an honor or privilege to do anything that just maybe doesn't always feel like an honor and a privilege, but it is an honor and a privilege to do anything that AA asks of me. I started, so I will say this. I was, my story, my drinking story looks a lot like a drunk kid, because I got sober young. Please don't, when I was new and I went to AA meetings and old people talked, I would think to myself, well, I can't be alcoholic because they're so much older than me, right? So when I'm talking, try to relate to my drinking, not necessarily my circumstances, if you got sober older. That's what I'm going to say, because I certainly discounted people that were old. Like if you looked like if I was speaking and like knew me was in the back, I would have been like, this lady's old. Right? So anything after 30, I was like, Jesus, so that's what I will say. I always like to say that because I don't know. I don't know. I think I say that because when I was new, I sat in meetings and purposely related out a lot. Because I didn't really want to be an alcoholic, right? I really wanted to continue to drink. When I got to AA, I would have told you that. I kind of always like joke, like I had 99 problems, but like a drinking problem was not one of them, right? I had like I was not doing well in school. My relationships with my family was terrible. My relationships with my friends were terrible. In fact, I'll get to it a little bit later, but my friends are actually the ones that like sort of planned my intervention. I was not employable, right? So I had a lot of problems, right? But I could not identify my own drinking problem when I got sober. I was really hoping I had like a mental health problem, which I'm not saying I don't. I'm saying that that wasn't the problem that was like killing me at that time. My alcoholism was, right? So let me start at the beginning. I grew up in Virginia. I grew up in Arlington, Virginia, outside of DC. I now live in Rockville, outside of DC, so I haven't gone very far. But I grew up in a very religious household. We went to church a lot. My grandparents were really involved in the church. I grew up with a single mother. I was an only child, a single mother. I was an only grandchild. And they lived around the corner from us. We all lived in Arlington. We all went to the same church. And I was at church a lot. We went on Wednesday. We went on Friday. There was usually something on Saturday, and we were there at least twice on Sunday. I grew up in, and it was pretty strict, right? I grew up with like these sets of morals sort of impressed upon me, like you shouldn't lie or steal or cheat, or you should be a virgin when you get married. And I had a lot, I could tell you a lot of Bible verses. I was actually just at a funeral service last week, and I like knew every song they sang, and I still knew the words. And I don't go to church. That's not part of my life right now. But like, I was like, it's crazy how like it's still there. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, gosh, like I knew when to sit, I knew when to stand, I knew, all the like stuff you say back, all that kind of stuff, but I was always like a, I would say I was always a restless kid. I was always in my, in AA vernacular, I was always in my head. I was always thinking. I always felt different. I always was restless, irritable, and discontent, really. Like, I never feel like I fit in. It felt like I was very angsty, I will say, right? It always felt like other people had like a guide that I didn't get, and I always felt different and other. And one day in middle school, I went home with my friend Kelly Dawson, and her parents. I didn't have any, my mom had some. It just wasn't part of our lives either. Like my mom drank sometimes, as I would find out later, right? But we didn't have it in the house much. It just wasn't part of our lives, right? But I went to my friend Kelly's house, and Kelly's parents drank. Kelly's parents partied. There was her brother was a drug dealer. There was always something going on at her house, and I loved going to Kelly's house, right? Like Kelly's house, we could watch R-rated movies, right? Like at Kelly's house, we could like do fun stuff, And so I drank at Kelly's house. I got drunk at Kelly's house, and it was the best time I had ever had up to that point. That's what I can tell you. It felt like my whole life up to that point was like the black and white part of Wizard of Oz, right? I'm laughing because Sarah's with me and she's from Kansas, but I was thinking like before I took that drink, it was like I was in Kansas, right? And I took that drink, right? And then I was like in Munchkin Land, right? And everything was Technicolor, right? People were singing and dancing. It was a party. Everybody was happy I was there, right? Like I was funny. I like lost weight, lost my braces, got taller. You know what I mean? Like I felt like I had never had that much fun in my whole life, and I wanted to do that as much as I possibly could, right? I was probably like 12 years old, 11 or 12 years old, right? And I did not at that point become a daily drinker, right? In fact, at times during my drinking, I was a daily drinker. I did a lot of weekend drinking. I did a lot of drinking because when you're not allowed to go to the 7-Eleven and buy it, you have to like create a lifestyle around drinking, right? So by the time I was 13 years old, right? I had my first drink when I was 12. By the time I was 13, all of my friends had changed, right? I had created a completely different life so that I could get drunk as much as I possibly could, right? My friends had changed, my hobbies had changed, where I went had changed, right? I had trouble, weekends were heavy drinking times, and so I was sick a lot on Sunday morning. I was not part of, I had been like, my grades were different than when I started, right? Like I was in AP classes, and by that point, I was no longer in AP classes, right? I had started to lie to my mom a lot. I had started to be a lot more aggressive and defiant in the home. I had figured my mom was the gatekeeper, right? I had to get through her to get out the front door to go get what I needed, right? And so I learned how to pick fights with her. I learned how to put her down. I learned how to get through her, right? And so she was finally like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care where you go, just get away from me. My relationship with, I had a relationship with like a God up to that point. Like I said, I was going to church all the time. It's not like we weren't talking about spiritual things, right? It was constantly we were talking about it, right? But somewhere within that year, I had kind of made a deal with God that if he pretended that I didn't exist, maybe I could pretend that he didn't exist and that we could just like part ways. You know what I mean? Because I found that I was like doing bad things and liking them. You know what I mean? And I was like no longer interested, I I had done a lot of things while drinking that year that were against what I was taught, right? Sometimes, I want to say like I was a blackout drinker. I didn't know what that was, and I couldn't identify that, and actually until I had been in AA and people started to talk about it. I just knew that sometimes I didn't wake up in the same place I remember being, right? I passed out from the get-go, I will say. I learned, I was telling somebody this the other day that, I also, I mean, it's not, it doesn't, you don't need to do drugs to be an AA, right? But I certainly did a lot of them, right? But it was more predictable for me what I was going to do if I was just doing drugs. But as soon as I started drinking, I had all these rules around my drinking that I didn't need to have around the drugs. Like, if I was drinking, I couldn't tell my mom I was coming home because I couldn't guarantee that I was going to get there, right? Like, sometimes I would say, I'm staying out. And then I would wake up in my bedroom at home and my mom would be like, I thought you weren't coming home. And I was like, me too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why I'm here either, lady, I had no ability to predict when I was going to stop drinking. And I also really had no way to predict what I was going to do, right? It was like getting on a train. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know if I was getting off at the next city, right? Or I was going to get off 3 days later, somewhere I didn't even know, I also, like I said, I also passed out a lot while drinking. Like, I would get sleepy and I would knew I had like 20 minutes to like get somewhere where I could like lay down, because otherwise I was just going to do it in your lawn or do it on the stairs or, in your car or at under the table at the party, right? Like, I always like I would just I could tell like it was like I could tell I was getting sleepy, and I would pass out. And I started to, I mean, I think to my, like, I kind of laughed to myself, like, so my drinking just went on like that, right? I was a mess, right? I was never where I was supposed to be. I was never doing what I was supposed to be doing. I would tell you that I was having fun at that point, right? Like, I was doing wild things with wild people and I was having a great time. I loved drinking, I loved the way it made me feel. Like, I had never felt that free. It was like, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. I no longer had that angsty, uncomfortable feeling. It was gone when I was drunk. And so I chased it, right? And I ended up being able to like move forward somewhat in life, right? Like, I graduated grades and like, did stuff, and like I was always kind of I always would scrape by, sort of, right? Like, I would kind of get in trouble and then I'd be able to like talk myself out of it. Or, I mean, my mom was like such a sweetheart, you guys. Like, she really was like wanted me to do my best. Like, I ran away one time from home. And I actually remember this the other day. I ran away from home. I don't even think I really meant to run away from home. I think I just got drunk and stayed out. You know what I mean? And then like had to come up with the story. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just didn't come home for 4 days, right? And I somebody finds me. I end up at home, and my mom, like, I'm going to bed. I'm in so much trouble, but she's also so relieved I'm okay. But then she said, like, she says to me, I think she's like, she's always looking for the silver lining. She was like, I noticed that you like stole this money from me and went to the store and got your contacts. I think that was like really resourceful of you. You know what I mean? Like, she's such a nice lady, right? Like, like, she was always trying to like, you're in so much trouble and like, I can't believe how mad at you I am, but you did like, but like, here's your silver lining. Like, you're not a total loser, but by the time I was like, by the time I was a sophomore in high school, I really was, everything I was doing, was either get drunk drinking or getting to a drink, right? That's really all I was doing. I would do just enough homework to like get by. I was no longer seeing my father. My parents were divorced when I was very young, and I spent every other weekend with him in a month during the summer, but I couldn't get away with as much at my dad's house. I just didn't have access to the same things, and he was a different personality, right? Like I couldn't push him around the way that my mom, I could push my mom around. His temper was just as bad as mine, and we had always, my whole life, we've butted heads. And there were, I just, like I said, like I just didn't have as much access, and so I created all this drama between me and my dad so I didn't have to go over there, and so I cut him out so that I could drink more, really, and but I mean, I literally like I just have I like I really wasn't doing anything other than drinking or getting to a drink. And I had started to scare people. Like I said, like the beginning of the end for me was my drinking friends ratting me out to my parents, right? My drinking friends called my mother, because I was blacking out regularly and we would be drinking somewhere. I drank a lot in Georgetown. Like I said, I grew up in Arlington and I ended up hitchhiking to Georgetown pretty regularly. In the middle of the night, and because right around 10 o'clock, I don't know about you guys, but right around 10 o'clock, I would just like start to like 10 p.m. I would just like start to get dressed, like it was time to go, right? It was like the wild was calling, you know what I mean? And so like I would like get dressed and like wait for my mom to be asleep and sneak out and go out, right? And a lot of times I would go to Georgetown. I was also drinking alone a lot, right? Anyway, like I was also drunk dialing. I was drinking and blacking out and calling people. And so I would like, my friends would be like, "Are you drunk by yourself? Like, where are you?" You know what I mean? And I was starting to worry them. We'd go out together and I would get drunk and disappear with people that I didn't know and they didn't know. And I couldn't really, like, they'd be like, "Who did you leave with?" And I'd be like, "Tommy." You know what I mean? They'd be like, "Tommy who?" And I'd be like, "I don't know." You know what I mean? It like never came up, right? And so they were like concerned. And also I think I was ruining their good time. Like they would like have to babysit me. I was becoming a problem, right? Like I would go out and like, if I went out with a guy, I was getting you in a fight because I couldn't keep my mouth shut, or like I was attacking someone else. Like I was becoming unpredictable, right? Like I was becoming like a loose cannon and people were gonna have to babysit me and I was becoming a problem. And so unbeknownst to me, they planned an intervention. My drinking friends and my parents planned an intervention. But they don't tell you that they're doing that, and they don't tell you when you're going to have one beforehand. Otherwise, I don't think I would have gone, right? Like they don't, like it's a surprise, And so one morning before high school, it's probably like 6:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, my mom was like, "You're not going to school today." And I was like, "I mean, I know that, but how do you know?" And she told me that my youth pastor was coming over, and like this doctor was coming over, and my father was coming over. Now, my father and my mother don't live together. You know what I mean? And it's early, and my dad doesn't do early. And so I was like, "Why is dad?" And I hadn't talked to him in like 9 months, right? And I was like, "Who?" So, but the thing about it is that I had taken two hits of acid in my bedroom before I came downstairs and walked into my intervention, right? And so I was like, "This can't happen. I gotta go." I leave, right? I like run out the front door. I don't know where I'm going, but I run out the front door. My mom is running after me. My dog gets out. My mom is wearing a bright orange pantsuit, with like turquoise rhinestone thing, and I'm starting to hallucinate. I now feel like the sun is chasing me, and I'm like, I like end up in this park somewhere. All of the adults involved are like coming from every direction, like at me. And my dad just like, I was probably like 125 pounds at this point. And my dad is huge. He's 6'4", over 300 pounds. He just picks me up and like folds me up like a suitcase and like shoves me in the back of his car. And we're off to the mental hospital is where we're off to, right? I think I could have agreed to like some sort of outpatient program if I had stayed for the intervention, but that was now off the table, right? And I will say, I did not get sober right then. It was probably 9 months to a year after that that I finally got sober, but that was the beginning for me. I was in that mental hospital for about 3 months. I was very, very sick, very sick. And I was really resistant to any type of treatment. The psychiatrist would come talk to me and he'd be like, "How are you feeling today?" I'd be like, "How are you feeling today?" You know what I mean? Like I was like, I took all sorts of tests. I didn't score well on any of them, but it was the first time that I had any sort of like real consequences from my drinking or anybody had kind of put forth to me that there was something wrong. But the whole time I just kept feeling like if people would get off my back and let me do what I want to do, right, I can manage this. Right? Like, I hear you. I'm probably drinking a little bit too much. You're right. I should be going to high school more. You know what I mean? I was still treating it like it was a negotiation. It was not. You know what I mean? I was not in a negotiating position. But what would happen to me from that point on is this. For the next 9 months, I would be. So I got out of that institution. Within 3 weeks, I was drinking again. And I would drink myself back into an institution. And then I would be in the institution until they let me go. And then I would get out, and within 2 to 3 weeks, I'd be drinking again. And then I would go back in. And I was just in this cycle, and I couldn't, I was in a spring that I could not get, like, I was in a trap I couldn't spring because I could not stay sober by myself. By the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't tell you. With any certainty when I was going to start drinking. And once I started drinking, I certainly could not tell you when I was going to stop. And it had been like that for quite a while. And what happened is I intentionally overdosed one night, because I had really had enough. By the time I got to Alcoholics, I met you guys. I had been to enough institutions that somebody had put me in an AA meeting, right? So I had been going on and off to AA meetings within that 9 months. Like I'd been introduced to AA. I really did not think that y'all had anything for me. I didn't relate to you. I didn't understand what you were talking about. I didn't want your steps. I don't want what you have. I don't like, please leave me alone. I was not interested in AA. I'm not a joiner. I don't really. I mean, I guess I'm a joiner. I feel like at that time, maybe I wasn't, but now I like to join things. I mean, I like to be in groups of people and get attention. You know what I mean? But like, I don't know if I'm a joiner. I didn't want to get a sponsor. I mean, I certainly don't want people like commenting on my life. I don't want comments, period. I don't like feedback. Like I just really wasn't interested in anything that AA had to offer. I had been sort of introduced to the steps. I mean, they're on the wall. I mean, I can read. You know what I mean? Like they're there, I didn't think I was capable of four or five, and I certainly wasn't going to go say sorry to people or like face up to what I'd done. So I just was like uninterested, But I went to the mental hospital one last time after my overdose, because I really scared my mother. And I really scared myself, actually. I didn't mean to take it wasn't like I was trying to kill myself. I just took too much, right? And it scared me. Like I was like, oh, this is bad. I could have really like hurt myself. And so I met, and this is my kind of what happened, which is like lame and disappointing, but it is what it is. I met a boy in the mental hospital, right? And he was going to meetings, and he got out before me. And Adam was going to meetings with Kathleen, outside without me because I was still in. And Kathleen was like tall and blonde, and I hated her immediately. And so I got out of the mental hospital, and I immediately became best friends with Kathleen, and started going to meetings with her and Adam. We all went to the same high school, and so I found this young people's meeting in my area. I had been to some of those meetings beforehand, right? They had a meeting in Alexandria at that time, and I went to it in rehab. And I mean, again, I didn't hear anything that was said in the meeting, but I started going to meetings with them, and I went to a meeting on Tuesday night. It was a big book meeting. I don't remember anything that was said at that meeting. I know that I shared and then like left promptly afterwards and like wandered around the graveyard as I want to do for at sometimes. And this woman found me after the meeting. And this woman, she just started talking to me. She didn't ask my permission. She just was like, this, I don't know whether she was particularly crazy that night and like needed to help somebody right now. You know what I mean? But she talked to me, and she told me about her drinking, and I related. And then she told me how she felt sober, and I related to that because that had kind of been my secret, right? Is that like, I grasped that I had a drinking problem, right? Drinking had caused me a lot of trouble in my life, right? It is really hard to be manageable when you don't know where you are or what you're doing a lot, which is what my drinking looked like. It looked like me coming to in places with people I didn't know, doing things that I didn't know, right? In places that I didn't know. And so, I was failing out of high school. All of milestones that you were supposed to meet at that time at my age, I didn't get, right? And it had occurred to me somewhere within that time that, because I'd heard, people talking and like drinking, my alcoholism was robbing me of the opportunity to have any kind of real life. I knew I wasn't going to college. I knew I wasn't graduating high school. I knew I wasn't getting married and having children. I was not having a life. I was going to do this. I was going to be in this trap that I couldn't spring for the rest of my life. I was going to drink myself in and out of institutions for the rest of my life. And I knew it. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't kidding myself about it. I just didn't know that there was anything that I could do about it. And so that's how I found myself in this AA meeting, right? I asked for help and left because that's what newcomers do. You know what I mean? I left before they could offer it to me. But this woman found me, and but she talked to me about how she felt sober because sobriety was my real problem. That was my real problem. Sobriety felt like I was walking through a cheese grater. It was unbearable. I hated real life, you guys. Like, my alcoholism wants me to be having a party all the time. I do not like any sort of mundane BS, you guys. Like, I don't want to pay bills. I don't want to talk on the phone. I don't want to have like weird chit chat conversations. I don't want to go to the grocery store. I don't want to like do my homework. I don't want to like go to my job when they want me to be there, right? Like I like working. Like I like my job, right? I would go to work, not necessarily like when they want me to be there, right? Or like be accountable to anybody while I'm there, but I'd go, I don't like being accountable. Like I don't like being in relationships where I have to feel responsible or people make me feel guilty, right? Like I only want to do fun things. I only want it to be fun. I don't want to deal with the consequences of my actions. I don't want to learn anything. I don't want to grow, right? Like, I don't want to do anything hard. Like, I just want to have fun. Thank you so very much. You know what I mean? And that is how I tried to live my life. And so, real life was unbearable for me. I hated it. And sobriety, I hated being sober. It was unbearable. Like the only thing sobriety did for me is make me want to take a drink. That's it. And maybe not at first. Like sometimes when you first get like stop drinking, like things get like a little bit better. Like you're a little more like, I mean, at least like you're gonna wake up at home. You know what I mean? Like some things like that, like you can kind of like have some kind of predictable schedule, right? People aren't as mad at you frequently, you know? But my temper is worse so sober without Alcoholics Anonymous than drinking. I don't pop off drunk. I'm a happy drunk most of the time. Although sometimes I do. I mean, I like to like, yeah, sometimes I do like to fight a little bit. But like most of the time I'm like I'm much easier to get along with when I'm drunk, honestly, you know? And so all that to say, so that's so I was in this trap I couldn't spring. This woman told me how she felt drunk. She told me how she felt sober, and I related. And I thought maybe just maybe, right? Maybe just maybe if I go to these meetings and do the things that these people are doing, I could have something different. Like maybe I should really give this sobriety thing a shot, right? Even though I know I'm probably not capable of it, you know? And so I started following this woman around, honestly. She asked me for my phone number that night. I gave her my real phone number. I had been treating women in AA like men in bars, where I would just give them a fake phone number for a long time. You know what I mean? Because I didn't really want their feedback. I didn't really want them to have my number. But she asked me for my number. She asked me where I live, and she told me she was going to pick me up the next day. She didn't ask me. She told me, and she said, "You should probably take a shower before I come get you." You know, hygiene was not top on my priority list. You know what I'm saying? You had to like walk by a mirror to get to the bathroom, right? And then I would actually have to like look at myself, you know. And at 7 o'clock the next night, I was getting in the shower, and my mom was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I have to get in the shower. This woman's coming to get me. She told me I had to get in the shower." And you guys, I hadn't taken a direction on what to do in like a really long time up to that point. And my mom was like, "That lady told you to do it." Like I looked, the look on her face, right, was like, you know. And I was a kid, right? I was young. I was a teenager, and so that sponsor, she became my sponsor that night. That she came to pick me up, but she went to the door and met my mom and shook her hand, right? And nobody had been doing that, right? Like nobody met my mom. I didn't want my mom would have been more worried if she knew who was picking me up than if she didn't know who was picking me up, right? Like sometimes I didn't know, but sometimes I wouldn't tell her because I knew she'd be more worried, you know? But my mom, I mean, I've been terrorizing my mother, you know? Anyway, there's lots of stories I could get into about drinking, but let me get sober. So I got sober, right? I got sober. I did the first 5 steps in the first year of sobriety. I went to a bunch of AA conferences. I heard a lot of AA speakers. I was very active. I did a lot of service. If anybody, I would every service commitment my sponsor had, I also had. And every commitment that my sister, like the other people that she sponsored, my sister pigeons is what we would call them, right? Every service mission they had, I also had. So I was like at a meeting 7 days a week with a service commitment at every meeting I went to. Like they were like, she needs to, my sponsor knew I needed to be very busy, right? I needed to be doing things. And people like in AA would make it seem like I needed to be there because that's what would get me there, which is like crazy. Like who, I mean, I was like still wearing slippers to the meeting. Like nobody needed me there. You know what I mean? But they would make it seem like, how are we gonna make coffee if Ivy's not there? You know? Because I'm just, you know, because people in Alcoholics Anonymous knew what drunks needed, right? They knew what worked for them, and so they did it with me, you know. And I fell into this group of people that was very active, right? There was meetings every night to go to. There was people that could pick me up. There was service to be done. It quickly replaced this AA way of life that we were doing, right? Quickly replaced my drinking way of life, which is really what I needed, you know. I needed to like stop talking to those people at school and start talking to these people. You know what I mean? Like, I really needed like a complete sort of overhaul of what I was doing. My habits were terrible and w would always lead me back to drinking, right? And so I got sober. Like I said, I did the first 5 steps right around a year of sobriety. That sponsor that was taking me everywhere and doing everything, she ended up like getting resentful and leaving the meetings that I was going to. And I didn't want to go with her. And I got a different sponsor. I also at that time stopped working the steps. I was very entrenched in the fellowship of AA. I like to say that I was staying sober on fear and fellowship. I was afraid of drinking and I was hanging out with people in AA a lot. I was busy doing the activities of sobriety, but I was not busy doing personal recovery, right? I was very popular in AA. I had a lot of brand name service positions. People would have told you that I was really in the middle, you know? But I was not continuing on with my personal recovery. And I would not take another step, right? I did my first, like I said, first 5 steps my first year. My 5 year anniversary, let's fast forward 4 years, I had not really taken another step. I had looked at 6 and 7, which seemed like I did not get sober to be a good person. Thank you very much. You know, I did not do 8 and 9 because I was scared. That's really why I didn't do 6 and 7, is because I didn't want to do 8 and 9. I was really afraid. I was really afraid of 8 and 9. But 6 and 7, I didn't understand what they wanted me to do. And I really didn't get like a lot of time. I mean, I had a lot of hurdles to get over. Like I said, I did not get sober to be a good person, right? Like I didn't understand what being late had to do with staying sober. Like nobody could, I could not understand that connection, right? And I think also in hindsight, I didn't know that I was even capable of being different, right? Like I didn't, like I just thought this was, I used to say a lot, like, this is the way I am, you know, like I don't know what you want from me. This is just the way I am. And my sponsor would say back to me, like, we're gonna put that on your tombstone. That's just the way she was, you know? I like really did not, I didn't understand why, like what you guys wanted from me. You know what I mean? Like I felt like I was doing so much, you know? But I was still stealing, right? I was stealing from employers, I was stealing from people. I was still really dishonest about what I really thought and how I really felt. My sex conduct was still not great, in sobriety. Like you wouldn't want your boyfriend to drive me home after the meeting. Let's just say that, you know. I really wasn't doing as well as I could. Like I still couldn't really go to school, right? I still really couldn't commit to anything. You know, I was accountable in the ways that I could connect to drinking. Like I gave AA my drinking card, but that was just about it, you know? And so when I was 5 years sober, when I celebrated my running buddy, I got sober with this girl, Lauren, and we were best friends. And she got drunk and died. She was a type 1 diabetic. And so there were extra risks for her drinking. And she went on a bender. And in the middle of the night, her blood sugar dropped after having so much alcohol. And she didn't never woke up, right? And I went to her funeral. And then that night, I was celebrating at one of the meetings that I went to. I was celebrating 5 years. Somewhere within that day, I got this understanding that that was me, right? Like if I didn't start doing things differently, I was going to end up just like Lauren. And so I went to my sponsor and said, like, I think I need to write my AIDS out. I think I need to start making amends.
right? I need you to talk to me about 6 and 7. I don't really know. I don't understand. You know what I mean? Like, I understand there's things about me that other people don't like. Right? But like, I don't really understand, like, you know, like I don't really get it, you know? And I wasn't helping anybody. I wasn't sponsoring anybody, right? You know, I did a lot of service at AA, but like in terms of like really inconveniencing myself or giving of my time in that way that's required to help other people, I was not doing, right? And so that's what my sponsor asked me. She said, we're going to meet, right? We're going to work the steps and you're going to help people, right? And that's what I did, right? I started sponsoring like a ton. I don't think I've had less than like 10 sponsees since that time. You know what I mean? Like I have always sponsored, like I always have a ton of people calling me, you know. Sometimes I sponsor them, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm just like the fun aunt that like you tell stuff to before you tell your sponsor. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I have a lot of breakdowns in my car. You know what I mean? But so let's fast forward, right? And so like my life got better, right? I became employable. I learned how to be a good employee, right? I started to be much more honest about how I felt and what I was doing and the problems I was having. In the 12 and 12, there's a synopsis of the steps in the 12th step. And it says the fifth step, it says we quit the deadly business of living alone with our conflicts. And I did. I quit the deadly business of living alone with my conflicts. I started to be much more transparent about what was really going on with me. I started, you know, even to the point of my sponsor would tell me something and I'd be like, I'm not doing that. You know what I mean? Like I was like gut level honest. You know what I mean? Because I was a people pleaser, right? I say to you whatever it is that you want to hear so that you get out of my face and I can go on with the business of doing whatever I want, you know? And so I got really honest. Right. Like I would be like, I don't know what you mean by that. Right. Like I don't understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, you know? And so I started asking questions and getting informed and making AA like internalized to me. Like, what does that mean for me? What does that look like for me? I wrote an 8-step and I started doing 9-step events. Right. I found that I hate doing 9-step events. I hate apologizing to people. I hate owning up to what I'm doing. I hate that. And so I try to live my life in a way these days where I don't have to make a whole lot of amends, right? But the first couple of amends that I made, face-to-face amends that I made, I threw up on the way there, right? Like I had to pull over and throw up on the side of the road because it just made me so nervous, right? I had a couple of, you know, I made amends to my family. So I had a couple of categories, right? I had family members, right? I had people that had really invested in me and stuck their neck out for me that I kind of like blew off in my drinking. Like I couldn't accept their help and I like blew them off, right? And I also had financial amends, right? And I started to pay back the money. I started to go make those amends. I started to sort of willing to own up to that person that I had been. I met a guy in AA. I met a new guy in AA actually, which is not great, but it was what happened. I met a boy in AA, and I got pregnant, and we ended up getting married. And I had a baby at about 8 years sober. And my whole life changed. I was not prepared for how much becoming a parent would change, not just the facts of my life, right? But also like the having a child was like the only like it fundamentally changed me, right? And I started to really drift away from AA. You know, I started, you know, I think also looking back, I probably had like postpartum depression, right? I had a lot going on, right? And I was really far away from AA, and I ended up at this meeting, and this woman was sharing, and she was talking about the same place I was talking about,
But she was crying because she was scared that she was going to drink again. And I was like, that's interesting. And the leader, I raised my hand to share because I was like, that's weird. And I started sharing. And the leader actually interrupted me in the middle of my sharing, which is kind of bold, right? But he asked me, he said, how close are you to drinking? And I said, I could leave right now. Right? And I didn't know that, but that had been true, and that had been true. Like if it had occurred to me, like going to that meeting, that I could, because I was 21 at that point, right? Barely, but I was 21, right? And I could have just gone to the 7-Eleven and like gotten a drink instead of going to that meeting, right? And it didn't occur to me. Like, I just was like, thank God my feet were trained, right? Like, thank God I had a habit of, thank God I like my whole life was kind of like still in AA, right? Like, all the people that I associate, like, you know, all the people that I associated with were in AA, right? Like, I didn't have anywhere else. Like, I wasn't going anywhere else. Like, I was taking care of my baby and I was going to AA, you know? I was going to AA a whole lot less than I used to, right? I was probably averaging like a meeting or two a week, you know, at that point. And I wasn't calling my sponsor and I wasn't answering my sponsee's phone calls. Like, they all had like the other person they talked to because I never answered the phone, you know. And so again, I was like saved from my own self, right? Like from that, I was like, you know, I called my sponsor the next day and was like, I'm really close to drinking and I don't want to drink, right? Like, I don't, like, I still knew I was alcoholic. And like, my alcoholism is such that, like, it doesn't matter that I had a baby at home. Like, I knew it. You know what I mean? As soon as I take a drink, the lights are out, right? The drink is what I'm doing, and that's it. I'm close to time. So let's fast forward a little bit. You know, I've been sober since 1995, and I told you at the beginning that that drinking had robbed me of a real life, right? And I'm happy to report that I'm able to participate in my real life today, right? Because of the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, because of my continued involvement in helping people and being sponsored myself, right? I continue to work the steps. They are a part of my life, right? I start my day. I start and end my day with a prayer. I remember that I'm not in charge, right? I bring the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous with me to work. But I'm somebody that I was afraid I wasn't going to graduate from high school. And I got my master's degree this year. I'm in a career, right? Like I'm a nurse and they like, it's funny, I spent a lot of that last year of my drinking in a mental hospital, and now I have keys to the mental hospital of where I work, right? Because I'm a nurse on the unit, right? They trust me to educate other nurses in the hospital, you know. They trust me with their behavioral emergencies in the hospital, right? Like, you know, that kid that I had, right, that I is 23, you know, I've been married for 23 years. You know, I got to like grow up and have a real life and I participate. You know, nobody's like, you know, I get invited to things, people want me up in their homes. You know what I mean? Like, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's easy for me these days to forget that, like, where it's easy for me to forget that, like, without AA, like, I didn't do any of this by myself, right? Like, Alcoholics Anonymous, like, my life is the way that it is because I participate in Alcoholics Anonymous and don't drink. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, like, just because I've been sober for 30 years doesn't mean that I'm not alcoholic anymore. Right? It just takes one, you know? And so I have to keep coming. I have to keep participating. And I think the way that, you know, for me, my attendance at meetings and helping other people through the steps is really what kind of reminds me because I get reminded. I'm in the meeting and I'm hearing other people talk about their drinking and I'm like, did the same thing, right? Or, oh, I started sponsoring somebody new recently. And she's always like, she's been sober, sort of. She's been in and out for a while. And, she's like, she's always like, I need to get back on my feet financially. And then, you know what I mean? And like, she's like running herself ragged and trying to make money. And she always has like, one, like the plan. And like, I'm like, why don't you just come to the meeting? You know what I mean? Like, that's like, let's not worry about that. Like, all of that's gonna come. You know what I mean? Or if it doesn't come, something else is gonna come and you're really gonna be all right. You know, like you'll get out of those jams you're in, I promise. But you gotta start with like the spiritual stuff first. That's what the big book says, right? Like we straighten out spiritually and then we straighten out physically and mentally. You know what I mean? It's not the other way around, I've also, my life is great, but I have also gotten to participate in really hard things in sobriety, right? My mother got sick, like I guess 8 years ago now, which seems like it's been so long, but 2017 she broke her hip and went into the hospital and died a month later from pneumonia. And it was heartbreaking and really hard and physically taxing. And it felt like I had done this, like it was like I had run a marathon for like a month and like I didn't even get anything good after, right? She died anyway. You know what I mean? And it was really hard for me. And just like, I mean, of course it was, right? But my relationship with my mother was a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I treated her terribly when I was drinking, but she was. We had a very tumultuous relationship. It was a complicated thing, right? She was mentally ill growing up. I didn't say this, but and there were some things that happened when I was a kid, and I was kind of forced into some positions that like maybe a kid probably shouldn't be in, right? Like our phone would get shut off, and I like would have to get a quarter and go to the payphone and call my grandparents to come help, right? Like sometimes she was catatonic, and she wouldn't answer me, right? Like that's what catatonia is. You know what I mean? And so like she relied on me for a lot of things. It was a complicated relationship. And my amends process with my mother, we were able to like have some healthy boundaries and like have a real relationship. You know what I mean? Like we didn't always get along. Sometimes she drove me crazy. And I would tell her, you know what I mean? Like, it was so hard on her. You know what I mean? Like looking back, I'm like, God, like, this poor woman. You know what I mean? We were hard on each other sometimes, but by the end we had this like Velveteen Rabbit relationship, right? Like we would like hang out, not get along, and I'd call her the next day and tell her I loved her, and we would like just keep moving. You know what I mean? Like it was fine, and I got to really show up for my mother. That's what I'll say, is that old Ivy was not capable of going to a hospital every day and making those decisions and talking to those doctors and showing up day in and day out and being physically uncomfortable and being tired, and not getting to do the things that I wanted to do. Like I am somebody who like, like when the going gets tough, I just leave. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just not there. You won't see me. You know, like, I don't show up for you when you're having a hard time. Like, that's like a lot of commitment. Like, I'm here for your like good time, but I am not here for your bad time, you know? And I really got to like be with my mother through this really hard time, you know? And even though she passed away, like, I know now that I can do that, right? Like, that was like something that drunk me, I would not have been there for. And I remember somebody telling me that I would look back on it like it was a privilege to do that for my mother. And I remember thinking at the time, like, no, thank you. You know what I mean? Like, you can keep this privilege. Thank you so much. I'd much rather have her alive and healthy, but it really was, and I think I told that story because, it's the holidays and I think about her a lot during this time. And I know that the holidays are hard for people. Like it just is a hard time. It's supposed to be happy. It's not happy for everybody, and it can feel really heavy and lonely. And there's a lot, self-pity and like all of that kind of stuff. It can feel really hard if things don't look the way you want them to. And at least for me, right? Like my mom's not here, and that's really hard for me during this time. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I really was able to show up for her in a way that I like nobody can take that away from me, So with that, I think that's it out of me. Thank you so much for having me. And that's it. Thank you.